Yes, everybody, what's going on? Find Out on Manchester podcast. Back again, I'm joined by Brendan, and we have got Dean with us today. What's happening, everybody?
Yeah, it's a nice Wednesday, raining in Manchester as usual, so yeah, brilliant stuff.
Get your questions in, get your comments in, everything like that, and we'll be answering some questions. I've got a feeling this one's going to go right off the deep end.
Let me start up, right?
Oh, so, here we go. I was going to give everyone a menu of what we were talking about.
Just
fucking diving
in. This is one guy I've wanted on here from the start. I've been following his Instagram post. Extremely interesting, Mr. Garnett. We've known each other a long time. Been in this MMA scene. We're like fucking dinosaurs in here now. But first one I want to touch on, we've walked in, he said, I'm not sitting in here if it's 5G. Tell me about 5G, mate. What's wrong with 5G?
Let's just touch on it there quickly. Yeah.
Quickly, so, briefly, what's wrong with
5G has no safety studies. It's never been tested for safety. That's awesome, number one. No safety studies. Okay, number two is it can't be insured. Okay. No insurer will insure people for the harmful effects of 5G. So there are two alarm bells that you should see ringing, okay? Now, your Wi-Fi router uses 2.4 gigahertz. Your microwave uses 2.45 gigahertz, okay? Now, one thing that's been totally underrepresented and, you know, not being pushed to the level it should have been, even our mobile phones are way more toxic than we've ever been led to believe. Now, there are several independent studies. A lot of independent studies, I'll reference them for you if you want, where they've used 2.4 gigahertz signal, a Wi-Fi signal, and they've given male rats cancer tumours within a few weeks. Now, obviously, a male rat life cycle is very fast, ours is longer, so this thing might take years to show on us. Now, there's something I wanted to talk to you about called the Moscow signal. In the 70s, I believe the...
Should I be taking notes?
I mean, you might want to, but...
well, listen, I'm all ears because I've been dying to get you on. We've got no time limit today because I'm having this.
So okay, well, quickly, so Moscow signal, late 1970s,
Have we found already Bravo?
We have, mate. This is it.
I am the British Eddie
really
Bravo. So basically what the Russians did was the American embassy, they used 2.4 to 4 gigahertz signal, which is all our mobile phone is, and they blasted the embassy for like 10 years, right? And over time, the staff in the embassy were getting sicker and sicker, and they started getting Hodgkin's lymphoma. Some of them were bleeding from the eyes. Yeah, a lot of them died of cancer. So that was a 2.4 to 4 gigahertz signal being weaponized, okay? Well documented. It's factual. It was on the History Channel, and, you know, it's a fact. So that's as far as I'll go now.
Terrifying.
It's scary. It's scary, but what you need to consider, right, is if our phone's only 2.4 gigahertz, you might assume like 1G, 2G, 3G, they all went up very small. Like I say, 4G is like 4.6 to 5 gigahertz signal. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you reckon 5G is going to use?
Go on.
24 to 90 gigahertz. Now, 96...
Like a gigasecond download speed or something.
I'm not sure how that works, but I believe for every gigahertz, like 28 gigahertz means 28 billion waves per second. So imagine these frequencies coming out of something in billions. So what they can do is imagine your white blood cells, I think they work like 100 megahertz. So they've got their own frequency. Everything's got a frequency. And you're holding your phone in your hand or whatever, and it's pumping out a frequency that's far more powerful than this frequency. It can start to break down those cells or destroy them. So 96 gigahertz is called, I forgot what it's called, but they use it to disperse crowds. They fire at a crowd and it feels like they're burning and they all run away. So we don't need a government that, you know, is very untrustworthy. Think about, like, a lot of people will accept 9/11 was not done by Muslims from a cave. Okay, the average person knows 9/11 was an inside job, and the average person also agrees that there are high level elite paedophile rings, right? Most people accept that, but then don't believe the rest of it. So what you need to consider is you're saying that politicians, they allow illegal wars and they plot stuff like 9/11 and they rape and murder kids on Saturday, okay? But then on Monday when they go to work, they're like, fucking hell, the economy, shocking, I better get into work today. Dean and Brenna skint. They don't do that. Where did the lies stop? Look at Jimmy Savile, okay? He was no lone wolf. Jeffrey Epstein, he's come out recently, right? And with all these scenarios, there's always three narratives. There's the mainstream narrative, the controlled opposition narrative, and the truth, right? So let's use Jeffrey Epstein as an example. The mainstream narrative is he killed himself, right? Now, you know...
On suicide watch.
Yeah, he killed himself on suicide watch. He broke his neck by pushing down on a bed sheet. So, you know, if if you drink your Kool-Aid and you know, you're heavily vaccinated, you'll probably go with that story.
You know what? I'm not even going to fucking say it, because there's far too many fucking allegedly's need throwing in there. But didn't Prince Andrew go and see him just before all this?
I'm not sure about that, but again, let's just quickly go back to that point. Look how well-connected he is, Prince Andrew. Who was Jimmy Savile well connected with? Why are these people who, even in the mainstream media, are saying run child sex trafficking rings, why are these rubbing shoulders with the elites, the royal family?
They have a mad connection.
Well, all of a sudden, you need to, you know, ask yourself, that's very unlikely, isn't it? That the royal family seems to be accidentally, like Jimmy Savile and now Jeffrey Epstein, two people who it's very close to, just have to be running child sex trafficking rings. What are the chances that they're against such rings? It's pretty much... nailed on.
I hope I don't get a bullet in the back. I want to put.
We've definitely found
to get
out. Bravo, by the way.
No, we have.
Fucking
no,
100%.
I'm interested in what you say, because I, you know, I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist myself. I watch a lot of documentaries and things. You're a lot more into it than I am.
I don't like conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
word.
Yeah, it's a bad it's, word as well.
It was crafted by the CIA in the 50s after they killed JFK, they assassinated JFK, which is pretty easy to figure out as well if you go and do the research. JFK brought an order around called the Executive Order 11110, and what he tried to do was remove the ability of the Federal Reserve to print money without audit. So right now the Federal Reserve produces dollars that is meant to be backed by gold, but instead is backed by nothing.
Really?
Now, if you want to trade oil or gold, you can only trade internationally in dollars. So this is why we attack places like Iran, because he wants to trade oil in euros, for example. So when the whole financial system is that corrupt, that's the head of the snake. That's what everything comes down to, really. So I don't like that term, conspiracy theorist, because it implies that I'm talking about theories. You know, everything we just discussed, really. Come on. It's pretty much factual.
I do know that there used to be a limit on banks. Banks used to be able to create money. Like, banks don't need money in the bank. If you come in and go, Steve, lend us 100 grand, want to buy an house. I don't have to go and find 100 grand. I just put 100 grand in your account, and I made that money. Just out of nothing, I just give it you. They used to they used to be able to lend 3 times what they had in the bank. Now there's 9 times they can lend.
Ten times. It's called fractional reserve banking, and it's illegal. And how it started was in the 1700s. What used to happen was we never had banks, we had gold coins, right? So you would take your gold coins to the bank, bars, right? And you don't get them out, they give you the receipt. So this is how money became about. This is now a promissory note. So what these bankers realised, many of them Jewish, I'm not attacking Jews at all, I'm not in any way discriminating against Jews, but a lot of these bankers are Jewish.
Right.
So these Jewish bankers, what they realised was, hang on, we've got all this gold in the vault there.
And we
could write receipts for gold we haven't got yet. Yeah. So that's how fractional reserve banking came about, anyway. And yeah, it is illegal.
They invent the money. Which is why you've got inflation and things like that, because money's just put in there that didn't previously exist.
The funniest bit that I find hilarious is they create this money out of thin air, right? They loan it to you, you get your house. Do you know what mortgage means in Latin?
Death
grip.
Wow.
Mortgage. Our language tells many stories. It's called etymology, and the English language is a controlled language. It was established basically, I believe the world is run by a satanic cabal. All right, that's basically.
Why do they have to be satanic?
I don't make the rules, mate. That's just something. That's the elephant in the room. Why do you think we have these child sex trafficking rings? It's all to do with Satanism. And there's a guy called John Wedger. He was a high-ranking police officer who exposed a lot of paedophile rings within the police. They were pimping out kids for $2,000 a week, social services. And his superior officer said, you don't know who you're dealing with. You're going to shut up or you're going to end up dead. He refused to shut up. He went to the Home Office. The Home Office said, give all your evidence. What evidence? It's gone. So he was out on his own. But he basically said, he said that Satanism is the elephant in the room. So when you've got these whistleblowers saying it makes perfect sense. You only have to watch the telly with an open mind. You know, Satanism is all around us. You'd always see celebrities doing all this. And people think it means nothing, but it is. It's them using symbology and rubbing it in your face.
So you think Satan runs the world?
I'm not sure. I'm at the point now where I try to stick to what I can prove, objectively.
Okay.
So, but do I believe, now this is only a belief system, do I believe now that there is a higher power going on here and there is a battle of good and evil going on? I do believe that now,
No, 100%, I'm in with that. There's too much bad shit going on in the world to not be a struggle. I think, between good and bad. There's a lot of good people, but there's also more bad people. I think there's two bad people for every good person.
I'm just trying to catch up what the fucking hell he's
doing. No, he backs everything. Everything's backed me. It's not a random guy chatting. It's facts, it's references. And that's what's intrigued me. You get a lot of people that go mad on Facebook. and they just go mad with rants. He backs it with studies, and I click on all the studies, and I'm like, nah, this guy knows what he's talking
about. I was half thinking recently about starting to, like, because I put stuff out there, and often, like, let's say 80% of the stuff I put out now, maybe 5 years ago I was putting some bad stuff out. Maybe I was pushing stuff out there that was the controlled opposition narrative. Maybe I was accidentally preaching the wrong stuff. But through trial and error, I've worked out now what the big agenda is, and it's much easier now to look at two pieces of information, leverage it, and look at the real world around you and say, well, that's probably what's happening. But I'm at the point now where some of the stuff I'm saying, I'd be happy to put like 500 quid up if someone can prove me wrong. That's how
and
easy.
You said you've took it to certain doctors and...
Well, yeah, like, you can try this. This is, like, if you just... Like, yeah, my GP asked me about 4 weeks ago when I went in with the abscess that I had on my gooch. He said, I haven't had an asthma review recently. Now, asthma is a vaccine injury, by the way. It only really exists in vaccinated populations. He says, you haven't had your vaccine, your asthma check up for so long. Do you want a flu jab? So you can imagine... Oh. I was like, excellent. Yes. So I was like, funny you say that, doctor. I haven't had the flu jab for a while. Can we talk about the flu jab? So straight away, he's like, yeah, sure.
Oh, no.
So I says, how much aluminium...
Get his book out.
How much... Well, I don't need my book because it's all in here, bro.
Yeah, go on.
Said, how much aluminium's in the flu jab? Guess what he said? I don't know, right? And I said, well, it's 250 micrograms of aluminium.
I'd been like, anyway, I've got another appointment, pal.
He goes, oh, you've been researching. And I'm like, you should be researching, doctor. And he goes, we don't study vaccines when we do medicine degree. And I'm like, I already knew this.
Oh, really?
No, it's not on the module. It's not on the module. Just like...
So who's controlling that then?
The big pharmaceutical companies. The Rockefeller family, they bought...
All vaccines aren't bad, though.
I don't believe any vaccine can work.
A lot of vaccines have ended a lot of fucking diseases that are starting to come back.
Okay. This is where I get triggered. All right. So, polio has never been eradicated. They changed its name. It's now called transverse myelitis and aseptic meningitis or whatever. So what they do is they rebrand these diseases and say, oh, polio's gone. They just called it something else, right? Now, what happens with polio, in my opinion now, and a lot of doctors are talking about this, and there is some evidence that I can send you on this. Again, this isn't something that's absolutely definitive, but I've seen enough on it to be a little bit convinced, or strongly convinced, really. But basically, like, according to the CDC's own data, when they've gone into an area and they give loads of kids other vaccines, like DTaP or whatever, then polio comes on the rise. So basically, the reason you get paralysed from polio is it's a heavy metal toxicity problem, just like autism is. So when you have neurons in your brain, right, and they have something on them called a myelin sheath. Now, let me just go off topic a sec. As a sports guy, Bren, when you do your visualizations, that myelin sheath, so you can imagine throwing a right hand, right? And the myelin sheath will, like, the neuron will fire and it'll create more myelin, right? And it works the same as practice. So if I get three groups, one practices the right hand, one visualizes it, one does both.
Yeah.
The ones who visualize and practice it have the same level of performance, and the ones who do both have. These are scientific studies.
So what happens
with these neurotoxins like aluminium, mercury, heavy metals is when they get into the brain or the central nervous system, they destroy the myelin, right? They destroy the myelin sheath, so the neurons die off because they're no longer protected. So what polio is and why polio causes paralysis is because it's attacking the central nervous system. Neurotoxins, it's in the name. It's in the name. So, yeah, they haven't eradicated any disease. If you look at... Here's one for you, mate, right? So the death rate of measles was 0.2, before 1960, right? The measles vaccine was introduced in 1963. It was already gone. It was well gone. Now, in 1920, you would die off measles, okay? Yeah. But guess what? You don't die off measles. No one dies of measles.
Because
not
fucking diarrhea.
Pneumonia, diarrhea. Now, what's pneumonia? It's a bacterial infection. When did we get antibiotics? 1946. Okay, so what you see is you look at measles on the CDC's data, and like everyone's dying from it, or like getting it, loads of kids are getting it, and right up to 1960 it comes down very fast, and then they bring a vaccine out when it's already declined. They say, we've got rid of measles, everybody. They haven't, you know. What they've done is they've blamed the vaccine. So have you ever heard that saying, correlation doesn't mean causation? So what they're saying is, just because vaccines have been introduced loads and autism's gone off, that doesn't mean it's linked. Well, why are we assuming it for decline? just because. Yeah. But let's think about this. From 1900 to 1930, what have we introduced? Sewers. We've got rid of shitting in a bucket. Yeah. 20 years later, we've got running water. 10 years later, everyone's got a boiler and hot water. Before you know it, everyone's got a washing machine and hand sanitizers in their house. Yeah. This is why infectious diseases have declined. Why isn't everyone dying of scarlet fever? There's no vaccine for that. Why are they? Typhoid?
I don't know what the fuck's that scarlet fever is.
Exactly. If there was a vaccine for it, you'd be terrified of it. Like. All right? So it's all big pharma marketing. Okay, check the data. The data doesn't line up with what they're saying.
Isn't that mostly an American issue where people are, one, having to pay for their treatment, and two, doctors are incentivized to give treatment?
Okay, I get this all the time, right? People go, well, you heard about bro, vaccines are free. And I don't know what to say to them, right?
The NHS still pays, doesn't it?
Where does the NHS get its money from? Exactly, it's not free. So the vaccines aren't free. You're paying for them. We're all paying for them. Yeah, yeah. So they go on the national debt. So what happens? They're called industrial complexes. It's like 9/11. When those towers fell, all of a sudden, me included, I got home from school, there he was, and I'm like, yeah, let's get them. Let's bomb them. Saying racist words and everything. That's mind control. That's me being mind controlled by the media. That's programming. So all of a sudden, I now hate and consent an illegal war. Okay, so this is how these things work. So what happens when them towers fall? George Bush and his cronies, they get a big loan off the central bank, which is owned by the Rothschilds. So all of a sudden now, the American people have borrowed $240 billion. And for every dollar they borrow, they owe two back. So the Rothschilds are laughing all the way to the bank. George Bush is made up because now he's got a big loan. Then he's buying arms with the $240 billion. Guess who he's buying the arms off? Bin Laden's uncle. No, true story. That's why only, do you know about the Bin Ladens flying out of America the day of 9/11? They had a big meeting.
One flight, weren't they allowed?
Yeah, yeah, this is all true. Now, a load of
picked up like 13 family members.
Well, how could it be so blatant and get away with it? Please, answer me that.
Because nobody gives a shit.
It's just like
Love Island's on, son.
There you go. But like, so
to do something that drastic
when you look at these industrial complexes like vaccines. So I seen an article yesterday. This group of big pharma, like reps or whatever they are like, right, we're gonna vaccinate 300 million children next year. So they've gone to the donors. Guess what they want off the donors to make it happen? $7.9 billion. Sad. Can you see what sort of money's in this? And then you look at things like Yemen. So the Saudi Arabians are starving Yemen at the moment for illegal reasons. And the only thing they'll let in, so we all donate aid. The average person like me or you might say, there's 100 quid for Yemen. Guess what they use the money for? They don't send food or water in. Guess what they send in?
What, vaccines?
Vaccines. Vaccines in. So you've got to start looking at the big picture now. You've got to start looking at who benefits. Who benefits from these things? And one thing I want to remind everyone of is because I used to struggle with this. These people, they didn't just turn up 10 years ago and infiltrate and corrupt everything. These organisations and families and bloodlines and satanic cabals and cults and secret societies, they existed longer than nation states. So America was formed in 1776. Apparently, the Illuminati had a meeting in 1773. Now, this is well documented, this meeting. All the European royal families, a lot of them were under the name Saxe-Coburg-Gotha at the time, which is who our own royal family comes from. Their not real name isn't Windsor. They just said that to market themselves better to you. They're actually the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas. Now, they had a meeting in 1773, and it was about destroying indigenous populations who now have to live off the land. When was America formed? 1776. So 3 years later, they get themselves over to the USA, colonize it. They kill 115 million Native American Indians. We have a minute silence for the Holocaust. Why don't we have a minute silence for 115 Native American Indians? More than 6 million Russians died in the war. What about them? So you've got to start looking at who's controlling, who aren't you allowed to say bad things about. So, you know, this is an ancient conspiracy. It's an ancient conspiracy, and it's been going on a lot longer than anyone can care to imagine. These people, they didn't infiltrate and corrupt our governments. They started our governments. They didn't infiltrate and corrupt our financial system. They own our financial system. This is why it's a totally different, you know, it's a totally different fish than what people care to understand.
Aren't you going
to
send yourself absolutely bananas?
This is another programmed response. Okay, you've been programmed.
I'm
dead busy, but I'm also not prepared to, you know, it's called learned helplessness. It's like, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. Okay, sounds, let it go then. Well, at some point, someone's going to have to do something about it because we are going towards a one-world government. And the only reason we're in this position is through misinformation.
Why is it a bad thing?
No, it sounds great. I'd be all for a one world government if it was ran for the right reasons. But when you're telling me the people running the one world government are going to be elected by no one, they're not going to answer to no one, and they're from a...
Well, our fucking Prime Minister right now, I didn't elect, you didn't elect. No one elected him.
Listen, that's a pantomime. I don't believe in that anyway either. So, you know, that's just like Corey. So, it's just a soap opera. It's not real. Like,
do your votes count?
No, of course they don't. So they wouldn't let you vote. It's an illusion of choice. Like, people...
Mate, where do you live?
Within.
Right. That's Labour, innit?
Yeah.
Never vote in anything else. No point you fucking turning up.
Nah, I've never voted in my life.
No, no, I never.
No fucking difference where we live because they're either Labour or they're not.
I did vote once, but it's stupid. It goes against what I believe in because at the end of the day, right, I want change in the world, and I know the only way for change is for people to become informed. The reason these people are so powerful is through misinformation. Yeah, Their biggest weapon is our ignorance, right? So for me to vote to get someone in is like you're basically legitimising that system. Mm-hmm. We need a whole new system. Don't expect to vote and have your problems fixed. It'll never be that way. I used to think people like Jeremy Corbyn were even real, but now I don't. They're still control puppets.
Anyone in the politicians in that politics world that you believe in?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of politicians stand up and say what I'm saying today about the banking system being illegal. Whoa. European politicians.
Are they dead?
These are MEPs from Europe. I don't even know his name, but it was a powerful speech that I've seen. And I've seen a few politicians speaking out against abuse by politicians. So they're real. But people like Jeremy Corbyn, he's not going to talk to you about the illegal banking system. No. And he's not going to expose elite paedophilia. He's going to push you towards a socialist agenda. So in the end, he's part of something called the Fabian Society, and their logo is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Mm. So, you know, in the end, mate, they're all involved. And it goes way... So I have people like...
But anyone who wants to be a politician probably shouldn't be allowed to be a fucking politician.
Probably, yeah. I agree. Maybe
at a jury service, where you go, you're a politician now for 12 months.
Yeah.
That'd be a proper way to be.
It would be, yeah. I think at a local level you can influence things. At a national level you can't. But if we got people together locally in enough numbers, then we could totally change the world.
Well, this is the main reason I wanted you here. For one, you get a chance to voice
fucking
it.
Fucking mind-blowing.
I know, and you can tell it's research shit. He's not sat there talking a load of jargon. He's got the reference every single
thing. I hate these idiots who say YouTube. Oh, what? Do you want a government source?
Like,
what do you want? PedoHQ, you want them to sign it off? Like, here's me going, the government's corrupt. And like, the government hasn't said so. So, like, YouTube is an open platform.
Yeah.
It's like the internet. Yeah, it's anyone, I can put a video on YouTube, so can people who are thinking. Yeah, yeah. So, using YouTube is a better source than the government.
Yeah,
but for a fact.
Anyone can put it on.
Now, if you go on...
Isn't that controlled, though?
It is now. So, they're now censoring vaccines. Flat Earth, 9/11, all these things now are being censored and
demonetized.
Do you think demonetized? But they're actually like you can't get them up on searches anymore.
Really?
Now this makes me laugh my head off. I post stuff about vaccines now and I get this like fact check going, you just posted something that's false. And like
what? Where?
Off like this automatic government fact checker now. And sometimes
post on Instagram.
Yeah, sometimes they block, they ban me for like
that's
24 hours.
Of the Cambridge Analytica shit, innit?
Well, what's happened now?
So Russians basically fucking hacked both the American election and the Brexit.
They didn't.
Election.
It's all bullshit. But yeah, let's imagine that's right. True.
Fucking hell, man. Can I say anything?
Yeah, but
supposedly,
what they use these things as a vehicle to do what we're talking about now. It's called problem reaction solution. Yeah. Oh, we want to censor the internet. Well, we'll have to pretend Russian bots are infiltrating the internet then.
Oh, yeah. That.
Do you know what I mean? This is how they do it. This is how they do it, boys.
I'm scared to say anything.
So,
mate, some of these comments, look. Preach. Preach. What is going on?
Adam Dickinson says... So KSI Logan Paul, who we got them?
Yeah, maybe we should put that to bed.
Let me get your opinion on this. How about Billy Joel Saunders, his next fight is on the undercard of KSI and Logan. As a professional athlete, a fighter like myself, who's worked your whole life to master a craft like Billy Joel Saunders has, and you get two internet bloggers who are going to headline and you're underneath them now.
Oh, it is. Only being paid about seven for what they're getting as well. At least.
Yeah, it's painful. It's painful to see. I always try to be... sort of like not be too biased here and try and sit in the middle you know, are they bringing more people to watch the sport? Yeah. Maybe they are. Yeah, they definitely are. Are they potentially at some point going to hike up money for other people? Definitely. Like people like Aaron Chalmers got a lot of stick, didn't he?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, for me, as long as they turn up and put a decent fight on,
yeah,
I guess it's okay. But I'd much rather see like a promotion, like is Fame Academy going to be targeting this sort of stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
I'd much rather see them on a specific promotion where it's like, yep, yeah, this is a bit of a freak show, guys. Because then I might tune into that.
Yeah, of course.
And it's not.
Now you're mixing the real.
Now
with
you're
the
putting.
Fake.
You put, that's it.
You sort of. I think they're probably doing it to try and legitimise them two.
But this is what we're going to get in the future show. Moving forward now. Because it's going
to
do mad numbers.
Manchester. I got three tickets.
More fool you.
Well, I took Jaden. So I got a, my lad was a
kids love him,
don't they? So he wanted to go. I went. And I went with the pure idea of, let's see what this fucking freak show is all about.
And what was it like?
It was the most insane crowd I've ever seen. I know how many fucking fights I've been.
Sold it out. It
was screams.
And they were just swinging at each other, mate.
You've never
seen... sold the MEN out. Mad atmosphere.
Screams at the MEN.
Listen.
Fight. Screams. Because the audience was, you know, 12, 13-year-old boys. Loads of birds there for some reason. It was mind-blowing.
Wow. So, do you know what? When you put it like that, I love it. I love it. But I would like to see it separated.
I agree. I'm
blurring the lines between elite sport... and entertainment. But
the UFC fucked it by bringing in CM Punk. They opened the door to this shit.
Bellator are just fully plugging it.
But Bellator, for me, it looks almost like a key component of Bellator's sort of plan for Europe. And again, you know, it's probably good business.
I've got
absolutely no problem with Aaron Chalmers and what he's doing. I know Aaron personally. I didn't know him prior to him doing MMA.
But he's legit.
But listen, he trains every day like a professional athlete. He goes in there and he's having real fights.
Well,
there's no Edgards on. He's fighting pro MMA with elbows.
We've just Edgards next time round.
I've just been introduced to Sam Gowland. I think he was on Love Island and so he's been doing a bit with us recently. I think he might be training with Alex Enland as well. So he come and stayed in Liverpool for a few weeks, and his manager said, you know, Bellator want to sign him.
Of course they do.
Like he's never. He's done a bit of training, but you know what? Again, like. The guy comes in, he's got a great attitude, he's got a nice energy about him, and he's working his ass off, and he's saying all the right things, like, if I'm not ready, don't rush me into a fight. So these people deserve their chance.
I know that you've trained Imogen.
Imogen, yeah.
No, yeah, she was telling me that she's put the work in properly. So listen, these people with these, they've gone on these reality shows, for example, Love Island and whatever else, and now they've seen this MMA, you know, they like it as a sport. Obviously, they're not ready for pro, they're just not. Do you know what I mean? We look at, let's say, for example, Mohamed Mokaev, a guy that we know.
I was just about to say
that's
going to
be on here soon. What, he's had 17 amateur fights or whatever he's had, yeah.
We're getting him to 30.
30 amateur fights?
I reckon that's a good plan, 30 amateur fights.
Is that another world championship then?
It's another world and another year. Basically, I want him to do senior worlds this year. He's opted for juniors again. I'm always going to go with what the athlete says because I'm an athlete-centred coach. It's all about Mo. I'm never going to pay his bills. So... he wants to do another year junior, which I'm fine with. So we're going to do a junior tournament this year. But then I want him to do senior European and senior world before he turns pro.
Yeah.
Because
that there's a legitimate amateur MMA scene.
Wow.
As well. That's not just localised. It's fucking worldwide. I was in Bahrain for the 2017 ones, and it blew my fucking mind.
I went to Rome. I'm going to Bahrain.
Right, nice. Well,
it's
listen,
outrageous.
When we started, mate... amateur MMA, what was that?
It was semi-pro. There was no amateur MMA.
I had a few semi... Hey, wait, let me tell you about semi-pro MMA. So basically what it was is they took the elbows out and they just put 2 fives in just so they didn't have to pay you.
3 fives I had an elbow
one as well.
Did you?
It depended on the show, yeah. They just throw in whatever rules they want and called it semi-pro. There was no amateur. You're not a pro, you're semi-pro. And that basically means
I
you don't
that
have to
word.
Fucking pay you.
That was semi-pro.
Yeah,
for about 6 months after that, all my mates were calling me semi-pro. That was my nickname.
But what they're doing now, mate, with these world championships and every country's got a team. Oh, mate, I love it.
Are you involved with the English?
I'm heavily involved with the English team now. But for me, I've got, as much as I want to be involved as a coach or even like a performance director, for me, there's a glaring thing. And do you know what? It's one of the most important roles that we need. And I believe I've got the knowledge to do it. I'm in 65 grand debt to have a coaching development degree.
Yeah.
And I'm very passionate about implementing coaching pathways. And because if you want to create loads of like a nation full of great athletes, you've got to start with the coaches. They deliver the sport day in, day out. They set the culture.
How many good coaches you know in the UK?
Honestly, mate,
Can you count on one hand?
One hand. And yeah. I know loads of martial arts instructors, yeah. tons of them, yeah. tons of them. But they call themselves coaches, but they're not coaches.
We're in a bit of a bad state in the UK.
Well, yeah. I think we need super teams. Like, I think, like that would be...
What, ATT?
Yeah, and I know that someone's building one local. I'm not going to say because I don't know if it's been made public yet, but I think we've talked about it, haven't we? Yeah. Like,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. In Ashton.
What?
The one in Ashton.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I want to see some super teams like that because I thought one of the, professional peaks of UK MMA was Roughhouse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That was, I used to go there. Yeah, oh, it was great. I used to go there.
We don't have super teams where there's 5, 6, 7 UFC level fighters all at once.
I'm gonna challenge that belief system a second, okay? What we need is super coaches, right? And what they'll create is super athletes. Yeah. Now, super teams, we don't need them. What we need is coaches who are open-minded and who do the job. When you agree to be a coach, you agree to support that athlete to reach their full potential. Now, sometimes that means signposting them to somebody else. That's what a coach does. A martial arts instructor, he doesn't have to make you get to your full potential. He has to instruct you how to do a technique. So I see a lot of guys now who call themselves coaches, but all they do is teach moves. So let's talk about Mohamed Mokhiev. So I would describe myself as his coach. Mm-hmm. And if something is good for Mo, it is automatically good for me. So he trained with Bren this morning, and I've been on him for the last year, saying, I want you to do more striking, Mo. You know, don't go to the wrestling academy one night a week. Mm-hmm. Go and do a session at All Powers, whatever. So what I try to do is be objective for him, because he doesn't, you know, he's not a coach, he's an athlete, and it's easy for us to stick to what we're good at. So I look at that athlete and I go, right, he needs this, he needs that, he needs this. So he doesn't need to go and join a super team. He's got all the tools. What he needs to do is access the network that he's got around him. So he needs to be in an environment where he's encouraged to go and train with Bren. Mm. He's encouraged to go and spar with
That's
what we need.
Out of respect for Dean, and also the first thing I said, he said, I might come again. I went, well, I'll speak to Dean. This is no, we don't get enough of in the UK. People are just taking, bum, bum, bum. And like, it's not just that, but it's like, He might come to, like, he might not trust me as a coach. He might, you know, he might think, and he's the one working with him. Well, what if I just like start working with Mo all of a sudden?
Yeah, just start.
And he thinks Brent's shit
every day.
You know what I mean? I know you don't. Well, but this is another thing that happens. They get like led astray to other coaches where you think you're not really.
These are like questions I had to deal with in uni on exam papers stuff, right? Imagine. So what do you do when this happens, right? Well, a lot of people go, well, you say you can't train with him. That's not what you do. It's athlete-centred. The athlete gets in the cage. Yeah. What you say is, all right, Mo, so Bren showed you how to throw a right hand. Yeah. It's a little bit different than how I want you to throw it. But these are the two options, mate. I like the one I've showed you because X, Y, and Z. Now, the one Bren showed you, it's good for this and it's bad for that. It's about him. It's called autonomy. A good coach creates autonomous athletes. Mm-hmm. So I want Mo to think for himself. When I corner Mo, I don't shout moves out. I shout, 30 seconds gone, Mo. Minute gone, Mo. I'm just a time. I'm
that's
just a timekeeper.
That's my coach, you know. That's all the time.
I might give him cues. I might say, chin down.
Yeah.
You know, I might say, get them
movement.
Hands up. Or I might say, set it up.
Yeah.
If I think he's, you know, but I'm not going to tell him what to do.
I know, you're not going to walk someone through the fight. You're not
going
to walk
someone
through.
Listen, I've had coaches in my corner going, armbar, triangle. I'm going for a kimura. And I'm going, me kimura's there. Kimura. And the guy's like... So if you're having to shout what moves he needs to do, he's probably not ready to be in there. So, you know, we don't need super teams, essentially. We need super coaches.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
Well, my idea on the super teams was it was a place that had gravitated a lot of top-level athletes. And a byproduct of having so many top-level athletes is they're going to have that around them.
Again,
anyway.
But what I think has happened in the past...
I don't think Roughhouse necessarily had that.
It can get too big where the guys don't get time off the coaches. Yeah. And again, what can actually happen is... You might have a few good guys at a team and all of a sudden they attract a few more good guys and a few more and a few more. Now, what's to say that coach who's at the top is doing things right? If he's not,
so true.
Now what you're going to have is he's going to have control over all these guys and people are going to think that everyone in there is doing the right thing. And I say this all the time, right? You don't...
It can be the athlete,
I know now because I'm a qualified coach development officer. Like, I'm qualified to teach you how to coach. Level one is the assistant coach. Level two is the LinkedIn progressive coach or club coach. So that's all about developing LinkedIn progressive session plans, like whatever. Level three is an athlete development coach. So that's about profiling and developing training. Programs for an athlete that's specific to them, and then level four is a coach educator. So I've gone through that process, so I know what good coaching looks like. And a lot of guys assume that if I was to go, like, okay, let's say this coach has created this professional MMA fighter, actually you could go in and look at some of these situations and go, hang on, this guy who's been number 10 in the world, if he was training with this other guy, he could be number one in the world. So for me, it's not always a good way to judge a coach. If I want to assess how good a coach is, the first thing I look at is his relationship with the athletes. That's numero uno, the coach-athlete relationship. I was saying this to Bren before, right? Loyalty is for pets, okay? If you've got a dog, it should be blindly loyal. It's your fucking dog. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it should be. But loyalty between a coach and an athlete is a byproduct. It's not like family. I don't like the term family around MMA. I don't appreciate it. And I don't like people talking about the coach like that. Let me just hear me out. Hear me out a sec. Hear me out. Hear me out. Okay. So the problem is, right, when we look at the coach-athlete relationship, I said it to Ben, four of the main key areas in the coach-athlete relationship is respect or mutual respect. Yeah. Admiration, so you have to admire the guy and he has to admire you. Co-orientation, so you're on the same path. And like-mindedness. So if you have them four things, you will be loyal to that coach because he's the right man for you.
There's no reason to leave.
Very good.
There's no reason to leave.
Everything's right, yeah.
So what I don't like is you hear these guys calling the coach uncle this or he's like me dad, and all of a sudden, it's now toxic because you can't pick who your dad is and you can't just go and get a new uncle. But you can go and get a new coach. That's fine. People leave my gym. Mm-hmm. People always leave teams. Most of them have come back, thankfully, which I'm glad about. But you know what? If they don't, I still have lots of love for them. And it's not a personal attack on me that they want to go and train somewhere else. And I don't expect blind loyalty from them. I actually appreciate when people are strong enough to be honest about what they think's best for them. So, you know.
Wait, you mean you don't make them get team tattoos?
I am absolutely against team tattoos. No family posts, no loyalty. I've told the lads off for it. We're not a family. Yeah. We're a professional team. Yeah. We're a fight team. We're a bunch of killers. I've got my mum at home. I do all my family shit when I go home. Leave that out.
That happens a lot, doesn't it?
Well, I believe on my degree, we talked about these things. And in other sports like boxing and wrestling, you know, these things are seen as abuse. They are, so why are they seeing that in our sports? I done my ABA level one, and the first thing, I love this and I bring this up all the time, so it was being delivered by like an older boxing coach who trained Anthony Fowler, and this is how it started. He sat us all down, he said, right, this is what we're going to start with, because this is number one. Do you want to be a coach? And everyone went, yeah. He went, right, okay, who do you work for? And we all went, the athlete. And he was like, good, because they don't work for you. Now, let's get this right. You don't own that boxer. Do not let us find out that you're telling a boxer what he can and can't do, where he can and can't go. You are there to give advice and guidance. He said, now let's talk about me. He said, now I'm a level four coach. I'm a coach educator. But 10 years ago or whatever it was, I was training Anthony Fowler. I was only a level two. I was a club coach. Yeah. I was approached by England Boxing. They said he's going to be moved to the England team. I had to relinquish all control. That was me done with Anthony Fowler. He's gone on to work with a coach at the time who was more skilled in the art of coaching. Not the art of boxing, but the art of coaching. The stuff I'm talking about, periodization, training programs, all that stuff, that's what he needed, okay? That's why we set up governing bodies. That's why we have coaching pathways. That's why we have these athlete development frameworks that are implemented across all elite sports, Olympic, you know, sports. So this is what I'm going to bring in for MMA. And I had a dream 4 years ago. Well, my vision was to open a gym that was going to be... I wanted to create a gym that was like family martial arts meets American top team. And I think I'm on the way to doing that. And I wanted to train legit world champions. All right, I've only had a gym 3 years, so I'm already done that with Mo.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
when he did come to us, he did have no striking and a ground the palm where he was a good wrestler.
Legit world championship.
He's a legit fighter. And again, you only have to... And that's not just me, by the way. So that sounds a bit coach-centred there, because it's not just me who's Coach Mo. There's a big list of coaches at our gym and there's coaches at Manchester Wrestling. And ultimately, it's always going to be Mo who deserves all the credit. But I'm still proud that I was a part of that journey. So I've ticked those two boxes off. And the other one was I wanted to create the first ever government-recognised coaching pathway for MMA coach in England. Now, being recognised, that would mean it's something you can put on a CV. It's something you can draw funding from a school to run a programme for. You can go to the job centre and get it funded. Yes. You can put it on a job application.
This is the way we need to go.
Okay, this is what I'm doing, Bren. I've got a meeting with English MMA next week to discuss this. Goddard seen it last week. Goddard was saying this is probably going to be the global standard. It should be the global standard. Don't get me wrong, I didn't reinvent the wheel, okay? I'm just being a smart man, I'm looking at what works. Everyone's like, we want to be recognised by Sports England, and we want funding, and we want to be in the Olympics. start talking like coaches who work in these organisations.
I'm sure you've seen the plans, haven't you? But just for the benefit of the audience, like the IMAF plans for bringing in junior MMA style competition to get nationally, into the Olympics.
Nationally or with the IMAF, if you talk about
just with IMAF in general.
Yeah, well, basically...
It's map-based MMA, isn't it? No
cage. Yeah, I mean, I think it's all right. I think it's good. I mean, yeah. You've just seen Ice get cancelled. Seen another show get cancelled that made the cage.
What?
Like, you can't get juniors to fight. I'm trying to match some of my juniors at the moment, and coaches are building juniors up. So it would be great to see a national championships like that, because that is a talent pathway. That's a way for, you know, the governing body
to
identify.
Do you think the aesthetic of the cage is too much for the Olympic Association, Olympic Committee to ever sanction? But they think that doing it on a mat like judo and jiu-jitsu and everything else that's done in the Olympics is the way for it to go, and I think that's a fucking belting idea.
I mean...
I don't see the juniors. Is the juniors in a cage or on a mat?
No, it's everything with IMAF in a cage. I mean, listen, I'm all... I'd rather that over nothing, but ultimately.
What's the youngest age for junior to fight?
It's 13, 12, is it?
13, I think. That's might be 12. About right. With a boxing, it's 11. I boxed at 11 when I was a kid.
But think about that with the brain and stuff.
Now, I'd rather not. I'd no headshots up until 16.
I agree.
No headshots until 16. You can still improve your performance in the body and training. So
I agree. I agree.
But yeah, I'd rather see it in the Olympics without a cage. But I think we should stand on our, you know, we should stand our ground. A cage is a big part of the sport.
It has to be in a cage.
So for me, I'm going to champion the cage, and actually, it's safer.
I mean, look at a cage. People go, "Oh, you cage fighter," but we need the cage. The cage is a part of the sport. The cage wall is a massive part of. Mixed martial arts.
But how much of Mo's game's fucking cage?
That's what I'm saying. So you're going to take that out?
To be honest,
Mo's looks like a
Mo's
cage.
10 times better off the cage.
Yeah.
Mo would be alright. Listen, Mo would win that championship easier without a cage. Mm.
You know, used to wrestle on an open mat.
If you've got any chance of defending a takedown against Mo, you've probably got the cage behind you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So it's not always, you know, people build full careers on cage walking, mate. They do. I've seen many athletes, even in the UFC. Aldo was great at getting him against cage. You try and take that man down against that cage. Some people have built full careers, and now you're going to take that away, and then they've got to get in the cage ultimately in the end anyway.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of the aesthetic side of it being something more palatable for the IOC.
But I don't like that, because I feel like it perpetuates that ignorance. Like, what? It's a cage. It's a metal bar. Like, what's the problem? Like, you know,
put in a ring,
like
it's not the same fight.
It is safer. You know, you've seen it when in Pride or even in like when they do the ones in France, because cages are illegal in France, aren't they? So fighting rings.
Have you seen a rage?
Go out the bottom.
Have you seen a rage?
Is that the one with the net at the bottom rope?
Yeah. So it's a ring, but then like the bottom two are caged.
It's
so
net.
When it's
like
on the ground,
fishing
you can still ram someone up against the cage and smash them up, but they won't fall out of the cage.
What are we doing?
No, do you know what?
What are we doing?
Do you know what, Brem? It looked all right. I was having it.
It looks shit.
I thought it looked alright.
So
it looks shit. It might work, but it looks shit.
Two ropes are like netted or cage.
Yeah, they're not chain link.
It'd be hard to take someone out the ring, so you could still wrestle on the ropes. And if they got down, you could still.
It's halfway there, isn't it?
You could still like, because I've fought MMA in a ring.
I have.
I done that KT MMA where I done a round Muay Thai pro rules.
Shut up.
And then you change your gloves over, put 4 ounce on, and it was Pride rules stamps.
You're joking.
What? Sick, bro. I done a tournament, didn't I?
Where?
Got like $5,000 for it in London. Beat 2 Chinese guys and a British guy.
Wait, so one round?
5 minute round Muay Thai pro. Elbows or lap pro Muay Thai, no, yeah, and then minute and a half break, swap your gloves over, unified one FC rules.
Do mental shit like
it
this
was
for
sick,
MMA.
Bro.
So just two rounds,
and then connect 4 afterwards.
Jeez,
yeah,
if there's a tiebreaker.
Wow, it was sick. It was sick, bro. I loved it.
Wow, that is mad, but that's something new. And like I say, that was another reason with the PFL thing that I was brought to it. I mean, I'm on 37 fights now. That's already bad, but yes, what I've never done. Fought twice in one night. You know what I mean?
It's
like
hard.
What you're saying, when you're at our stage now, you're a veteran.
I think, mate, it's just about
you're just looking for
injuries,
new things.
You're looking for challenges, aren't you?
What about that rope and glass shit in Thailand?
Oh, have you seen one where they handcuff each other together and just lever each other?
X fighting or something.
Now, that's stupid. There's no skill in
that. M1 Global's
What about when it's like 8-8? Just going at it. Have you seen that one?
The first one to drop in it.
I'd much rather fight Burmese boxing with their butts, me.
What do you think of that?
About, like that? Have you seen M1 Global as the ones where they dress up as knights? What about that?
Yeah, the knights.
I'd be into that too. I don't like the team ones because you'll get shit houses in there.
It's just the first team to lose someone's death.
Do you know what I mean? So the team ones, that's for me, that's just
man.
Shit. That's
you're having a street fight?
Get in and have a straightener someone.
It's like hooligans back in
But have you seen it? It's in like an assault course. It's not on a mat. They have like fucking levels to it.
Why do you have slice? The athletic guy is going down slides on the head.
It's fucking carnage. So, that's just Russia and TV have gone, I know what we need to do.
Yeah.
Right, so going back to coaching.
Yeah, sorry.
We're talking a lot about coaching.
Well,
talk to me, Dean. What's going on?
Let me introduce my 6-1 programme, because it's something that I'm very, very passionate about.
No, forget that. I want to know about Dean the Fighter.
Okay, let me talk about Dean the Fighter.
Tell me what's going on there now.
The problem is with Dean the Fighter, right?
Tell me about getting staff on your gooch.
I'll get to that now, all right? So the problem is with me, lad, is I'm so used to wearing so many caps now. Sometimes I'm in schools. Next week I'm doing a presentation to the English MMA board. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm dealing with parents. I'm running my own gym. I'm working with fighters like Mo. So I've got my fingers in so many pies. So, you know, I'm creating a personality that's all about working hard for everyone else. So one of the things I've done was bring Johnny over so that I'm not the coach at the gym. So I'm not the coach at the gym now. Now, I've got a business partner, Phil Turner, who is an excellent jiu-jitsu coach. And he's been off for about since Christmas.
Where's the spot?
It's just off the motorway in Broad Green, as soon as you come off the motorway in Liverpool. Now, his little lad, Alfie, is battling leukemia at the moment, so losing Phil was like losing my other half. For me to fight, I need to part all my workload onto Phil. So I've got this gym, and this 6-1 program, bro, I'm delivering level 2 and level 3 coaching qualifications to 24 students. So I'm like a school teacher. I'm basically a full-time.
You're teaching coaching at 6-1.
I teach coach education.
What? Tell me about this fire that's deep inside all of us, where we just want to get in the cage and fight. Has that been put to one side?
No, I'm going to come back to that now. This is part of that. So I used to be, you know, solely that guy, but now Phil's come back to gym, right? Johnny's here now as the coach.
Yep.
I've brought in a tutor who's now delivering me 6-1 programs. So I'm like, right, it's time to go back to me. I went to see like a bit of a medium recently.
Okay.
And
did they say what did they say?
They said, finish the job. Finish the job.
The athletic.
What I took from that was, I said before, I had 4 goals, didn't I? Create a gym, develop the coaching pathways for English MMA, coach champions, and get in the UFC. Now, I've been offered UFC twice. Yeah. I got offered UFC nearly 2 years ago. I just battered Michael Tobin, who was 12-0.
Battered Michael Tobin.
Yeah.
Wow. On the same card. Remember that night? Good night at the MBN, that one. Nice little bonus.
That ACB.
Well, stole me bonus as well. Stole me bonus.
I'm watching
in the back, right? And it's 10 grand there now. Cash your eddies on the line.
Allegedly.
I've watched him go, boom, spinning back kick. I thought, no, boom, boom, boom. Right, well, that's gone. The 10 grand's gone. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, end of the night now. Bang, I've head kicked Mike Wilkinson. I'm thinking, oh, no. Then Khalidov comes with ultimate overhand right. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm never getting paid here. But just prior to this, I made a deal with ACB. It's probably tell you this, but who cares? I'll take this purse. But they went, you won't be in the bonus system if you take that purse. I went, sweet. I'm not going to get it. Anyway, 24 fights. Anyway, now, next thing, I'm thinking, why did I take that deal after the knockout? So I've gone in the change room. I'm like, wow. And they've seen Khalidov do the overhand right. I went, oh, P gets it. You know what I mean? Oh, Dean, because I don't even want it now. I know I'm not getting paid. Anyway, next day now, gets a call. Hey, mate. Just so you know, you got knocked out of the night. I went, brilliant. Nice one. Thanks for letting me know. But guess what? We're going to give it you anyway. Can you come to the Chino Village Hotel and pick it up? I went, be there in 10, mate.
Yes, what a night that was. Good night, that.
But carry on with what you were saying then.
Yeah, so that night's kind of put me on a bit of a platform there.
Yeah.
Dean was I was always a grappler.
Yep.
And now I feel like I've still got loads of work to do. But, you know, I got to that point and I demonstrated that I'm well-rounded. I can wrestle. I've got submissions. I can strike. So we contacted UFC. I was 9-0. Or 9-1. Sean Shelby's like, yeah, we've been following Dean's career. We're into him. We like him, but the roster's full. No room for. So let's talk to ACB. ACB offered me a nice contract, and they put a get out clause after 2 fights for UFC.
Brilliant.
So it sounded great. So I signed that contract, and then I signed a fight Magomed Magomedov.
Why would you take the 2 hardest fights in your career then at that stage?
Who, me?
Yeah,
because I've never turned the fight down.
I know that.
I never ever will.
But have you been told by the UFC, right, you're in? We're just waiting for a bit of room
to
free up.
Listen, that ain't
And then you go and take the 2 hardest fights.
Well, let's just carry on anyway. So, for me, it was about, hang on, I can go to Russia and I can fight in Chechnya and I can fight the former champ. Let's go.
You're so unlucky.
And then I said to them, like, I'll do it, but I want to be in Chechnya for 4 weeks. Book me and Az at holiday.
He went to Chechnya training at
4 weeks. It was sick. It was sick, bro.
No.
So I went over to Chechnya.
Let's tell the story.
It started great. I put Magomedov down twice.
Oh, what a fight.
Nearly tore him a new arsehole. And do you know what? For the first time in my career, I got dropped and I was out cold, bro. I was out cold. I somehow got up and I fought on. But I'm like,
you didn't even know where he was.
Lad, I was gone. That was me, out cold on my feet. I've been knocked out one time before that in my life when I was 15. I worked in town as a glass collector, and literally some lad tapped me on the shoulder, and as I turned around, he banged me, a full grown fella. And all my mates who saw it said it was amazing how he never went down. Apparently I was walking
but you
was about 10 feet, and then I just stood there. I was out. I had a concussion. I didn't know my name or nothing. So the twice I've been knocked out, I'm not asleep.
You're
so
not actually gone.
I reckon I must have a good chin. But anyway, I got up and I fought on, but whatever, like, that fight camp, I popped my knee. Yeah. So I never done any offensive wrestling at all. I just struck. Didn't do no jiu-jitsu. Mm. But my takedown defense is typically quite good, so that held up.
Yeah.
But when I was dazed, he took me down. I used an underhook, I got up, and I started to take him down. This is me doing it. When I'm watching it back, I'm like, I'd fight that guy again tomorrow now. Because that's me. And as I went to take him down, he locked up his guillotine and... You know, that was all she wrote. But I thought, you know what, I've still got another fight where I can sign to UFC. Yep. We spoke to Shelby, and Shelby said that performance was sick. He looked great. He's just got to win his next one, and he's still like 10-1. He's in.
Exactly.
And he still finished like 7 of them, 10 or whatever. So, good to go. So, I'm fighting Anthony Leone. It's in Australia. All my family live in Australia. I've dreamed. And you know what's mad? I was watching Magomedov fight years before, and I thought I'll fight him one day. Yeah, on YouTube.
What, random guys?
I was just looking at loads of...
Well, randoms?
I didn't just look at randoms. I looked at the world bantamweight rankings, and I was looking at like guys who were like 190, 70, and he was just up and coming. He's like 6-0 or something.
Right.
And I don't know why I thought I'll fight that guy one day. And I always said to my mates, I'm going to fight in Australia. So it was weird. I was ticking off like, this is my journey, bro.
Pausing.
So I'm
fucking so refreshing to hear stories.
I get over to Australia, and it was like a holiday. So while I was trained hard, I was eating junk food.
Oh, no, you did
so,
a bad cut.
So the night before the fight, lad, I was 69.7 kilos, and I've got to be 61.8 the next morning. So
like, it was 18 pounds.
It was 18, 19 pounds, right? But I don't know what it is about me, lad. I'm a professional. Like, I'm not going to miss weight. And do you know what? On reflection, I should have just missed weight. That Anthony Leone's fought everybody, lad. If I turn up a kilo over, he's probably made up going, yeah, I'll take another $800 off him. Yeah. Probably be made up.
No,
but soft ass, nearly killed myself, weight. And I knew in my head, I've got 2 rounds.
Yeah.
After round 2, I'm going to be fucked. Because that's what happens when I do big weight cuts. It happened with Dom.
Yeah.
It happened with Dom, bro.
What a fight. Another good fight.
So I'm 2 rounds up against Leone, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, what's the highlight of that fight? Yeah. It's all me. He can't take me down. I take him down at the end of the first. And here's where it went wrong. My decision making cost me. So I knew it was late in round 2. And I looked at the clock, and I saw the clock, and I said, 30 seconds, we'll take him down. And what I should have done is waited for the opportunity to take him down. But instead of it, take him down and just shot in like an absolute...
I remember.
And he's got a really good guillotine. What was weird is I got the takedown and I passed. And it was like in my head, there's only like 10 seconds left. And I let him get his guard back, and there wasn't just 30 seconds left. And I got tapped out. And you know what? That was where I really fucked up. Because if I had just got through that fight, I think I would have won the decision. It would have been a bit sloppy, but then UFC would have been real. And I think my food issue would have died there, and then I reckon I'd have just never had a weight issue again. But, like, who knows? Because that was for UFC Liverpool. So if I won that fight, I was on UFC Liverpool. So I've been this close twice.
Have you got regrets for taking them fights?
Nah, I still don't regret it. I just feel like that's my journey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've learned so much about myself. And, you know, UFC said, look, 2 wins and you're right back in the mix. So I fought Dom, I beat Dom by the skin of my teeth. Dom's going to be a really successful fighter, in my opinion. Again, I think gas in round 3.
Think about the 3 fights you've had back to back there, mate. Just think about that for a second. They're 3 of the best bantamweights in the world. Dom's up there. Let's have it right. Leone's a world name, and Magomedov.
I think he's about to drop soon. Yeah. He's going to drop in the next few weeks, apparently. So,
talking about 3 of the best guys out there, there's absolutely no shame. That's fight with Magomedov. Everyone go online and watch it. Brilliant stuff. The fight with Dom Woodin, brilliant. Leone, bad weight cut.
Bear in mind, I got fight of the night.
That's what I'm saying.
For 2 of them 3, and I was second only to you, probably, in Manchester.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm putting on good performances. Yeah, I'm not a boring fighter. And if I had an amazing gas tank or a weight cutting so much, then maybe it'd be a different fighter altogether. So, I wanted that's where I was. I beat Dom and it was like, I'm going to get one or two more and we're gonna go back to Sean Shelby. But I'm not going to fight no bums to get there. I'm only going to fight legit guys. So I was there for Dom, and then the realisation of losing Phil, Alfie getting cancer, and me having to deliver the sixth form course on my own, it was a reality check. It was like, right, you're not going to be able to do all of it. And you're not in a position where you can sacrifice these kids. Like, the government aren't funding me with, like, these contracts I'm getting with schools, bro. You're talking nearly 100 grand contracts, all right? So, and never mind the money side of it, I'm committed to them kids and them students. Like, they come first. So I can't put that to one side.
I feel like you're on a bigger path now.
I'm on a bigger path, and I'm still going to go to UFC.
Yeah.
That's my legacy. Yeah. It's part of my legacy. It's part of my path. I'm going to get there.
How old are you now?
31. And you know what? Other than the weight cuts, I don't spar. Like, I'm not one of them guys who will go around. If I went to a gym and someone was punching me too hard in the head, I'd just say, go ahead, mate. I'm all right. If you want to fight me, get on the phone. I want to earn some dough for fights, but I've only got one brain. I use mine. I don't know about you, but mine's got a job to do. So
I'm the same with you.
I'm not here for people to fucking punch lumps out of me. So I think I'm gonna have longevity. Yeah. I'm either looking to move up to featherweight, or I've got to really, really, really sort my food out, because I believe I am a bantamweight. I just like my food too much. if I can get to 68 fight week, I'll do bantamweight no problem.
Yes.
But I'm 69 the night before the cut.
So I don't know. You are famous for that weight cut.
That weight cut documentary.
How many? Have you,
oh shit! Of course, yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Have you?
Just fucking twig right now.
What happened?
BBC Three, was it?
BBC Three iPlayer, I think it was.
Yeah. If you've not
you
seen that,
got
definitely
calls,
check that
texts. It made you famous. You know, people ringing me going, get on this program. Yeah, no, we
lad. Like, I was in Australia traveling.
What did you get up to? What was the actual weight you went from?
69 to 61.7.
In how many hours?
10 hours.
How many kilos that?
7.2.
Right.
7.3 kilos.
It's like 15, 16,
more than 10%.
I'm glad they did that documentary.
Well, I'm glad they did. And do you know what, lad? 3 weeks before, Danny Roberts paid for me to go to bloody Barcelona, right? And I'm not one of these guys who will have a cheeky bevy in fight camp.
Oh, was you in?
And I went and got on it. Like, me, Danny, and I. That, like, that, you know, it was a nice treat.
3 weeks before?
3 weeks out, bro. And that's what put me weight back up. So that was all my fault.
Is he on the beers?
I had a few
pints and everything.
No, I was drinking like vodka and stuff, but I was eating loads of stupid food. So
that's the problem with boozing. It's not the boozing.
It's the next day.
So I kind of ruined that camp, that fight. But in hindsight, I feel like, again, do you know
journey,
what?
Mate.
I'm glad I didn't do like a 5 kilo cut and it was all nice and rosy. I mean, it was a horrible experience and it was the hardest cut I've ever done. But I'm glad.
How did the BBC come on to you?
So. Obviously, I do a lot of work at the universities.
Yeah.
So they approached the university about it, and again, I was a natural fit for it because I understand the science of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But essentially, I'm doing big weight cuts as well, so they wanted probably someone who could articulate what's going on. So yeah, it was just I was a natural fit for the program, and it's mad. Some of the places I've been in, some mad places, and I get recognised that documentary. All the time. I never get recognised for being a fighter, and I'm telling you now, it hurts, bro. Like, I'm better
Why
known.
Why didn't they show the fight?
They weren't allowed.
All they were asked about was the document.
It wasn't about the fight, was it? The fight was just set.
I know, but it's a nice topping, isn't it?
Well, they did give... That was a fighter draw, then again, that was a third round that I got spanked in because I gassed out. So, I'm a two. When I do these 7 kilo weight cuts, I'm a 2 round fighter. But when I do a 5 kilo one, I can go for 3 rounds.
It's missed such a fine line.
Yeah, but 4 or 5 pounds is, you know, that's 1 pound. So you're talking 5 more of them in water, lad. If you put 18 pounds, that's 18 bags of sugar in a bag. You'll get tired carrying that round for a bit. Do you know what I mean?
So we end up talking about weight cutting
every
single
time.
Week,
so let's do it. 281.1.
Well done, lad.
It peaked at fucking 90.
So we're doing a little thing every week. This is what, fifth or fourth episode, whatever. And I'm helping him a bit. I'm trying to tell him what to eat, what to not eat. He's addicted to Red Bull. Tell him about how bad they are. Oh, go on.
You don't need to tell me how bad they are.
No, I think
but I am addicted to
them.
I like them.
The stuff they're putting in them now, there's some links coming, you know, when these footy players die on the pitch and you don't know what it is. Some of that's being linked back to like what they're putting in these energy drinks, like
the taurine
and
shit.
It's absolutely not good for your body.
No, listen, come on, mate. it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out 26 grams of sugar in that much.
I'm fully aware.
Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, like my weight went from about 270, started smashing the gym after being pretty sedentary for a while. Mostly a bit of elliptical because I can't fucking run at the minute. I can't run anyway because I've got compartment syndrome in my calves. So I'm doing the elliptical because it's low impact. And then just doing a bit of Olympic lifting and a little bit of just like bodybuilding type shit. Mm. Just to get back strong before I think I need to get to about 240 before I can think about grappling again.
He's fought MMA.
Have you?
Yeah.
Nice.
I did 170.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Trust me.
The good old days, eh, lad? Hey.
Listen, mate. This is how we met in a dirty little dungeon gym about 10 years ago, mate. I met him.
I don't think I can get under 200 now. I think I'm probably too broad.
Definitely can't.
I think 200's
fucking.
I reckon 225 I'd probably be like fucking Paulo Santos, I reckon, at 225.
Yeah,
I think
170, kiss goodbye to that forever.
No, it's not fucking happening. But yeah, I want to start grappling again, but I think I need to be. Yeah, I reckon I've got to be like 240.
I mean, like.
You've got no gas tank. I can't even see a gas tank, let alone have a gas tank.
Just not after a big weight cut.
That's bad. You've got gas.
I'm all right. Yeah, it's when I do a big weight cut, I lose my gas tank.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm £9 down from Friday.
Fuck it, mate. We need to accelerate.
But it was all
how
water.
How many Red Bulls you had?
Today? Two.
£9 down since Friday. Are you doing this healthily, though, or are you doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. I've not even really tempered my diet. I'd gone up from about 270 to nearly 290, and it was all because being from going sedentary to hitting a gym, I just fucking piled on a right load of water. Yeah, you should see my fucking ankles. It was absolutely cankles. Ridiculous. Proper cankles, man, yeah. And it sort of like peaked with the fucking. I went to London with the missus, walking around all fucking day. You should have seen the state of my cankles. It was ridiculous.
Realistically, when are we aiming for this fight then?
Oh, I hadn't told anyone we was doing a fight yet.
No, well, I'm telling you, the all guy's right. going to fight again.
Fuck's
I'm
sake.
I'm telling you. I'm breaking the news.
November next year. So there's a long way to go.
Before then, mate.
Well, the reason for November next year is it'd be 10 years.
It's 10 years to me, lad.
10 years since I last fought November next year. So I fought 10 years.
Anniversary.
And what I wanted to do... All right, fuck it. We're telling everyone the plan now, aren't we? So what I was doing is I was doing about a three-month little mini camp now. Not too serious. Just seeing if I could sustain training 5 times a week and see if I could fucking handle it for the 3 months. I'm 5 weeks into it and I feel good. Made it part of the routine. Park up here, I go to the gym in the morning, and then I come and do work. So I've actually made it part of the routine. Starting 2-a-days this week.
If he came to your gym with that and he told you he's four and he's this weight now, what would your advice be for him?
Hang on, let's get the rest of the plan out and then see what he says. So we're about 5 weeks into it at the minute. The fucking weight went from 270 to nearly 290. It's back down at 280, and it feels like it's actually coming down. I've lost quite a lot of body fat. I can see in the mirror I've lost quite a lot, but my fucking weight had gone through the fucking roof, which was doing my head in, because I was like, when is this going to peak? Like, it was going up £2 a day, which is fucking nuts.
Don't worry about that. Don't get on the scales every day for a start.
Yeah.
Well, I was just carrying on going through it. Like, it didn't change me. I was just like, shit, when's it? Am I going to hit 300? it got up. It started to come down. The plan was 3 months of this, and then I was going to try and do a 12-month thing, because obviously I've got a family, I've got work. I can't really just fucking stop my life for 5 months to go in a proper camp. So I was going to go and make a bit of a documentary almost for the channel and for everything else, go and spend some time with someone, maybe strength and conditioning related, spend a week with them, and then do a podcast with them and make that part of the documentary. Okay. Then maybe go and spend a bit of time at a Thai gym.
Yeah.
Spend a week there. Do a podcast with him at the end of it. It's basically a full journey, making content and obviously getting back down into a fight shape. Obviously enhancing and improving my skills as we go. And the ultimate goal to be November next year, 10-year anniversary, get in again and have a tear up. So, with that being the case, what would you reckon as a coach?
It sounds like you're on the right lines. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think heavy lifting is the best thing to start with.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting, why?
So... you'll probably find this interesting.
Cardio
right
fucking aspect of it?
Let me come back to that in a sec, okay? Because I'm not a big fan of cardio when it's just running too much. I'll tell you why.
No, I mean the cardio aspects of the weights. Oh, I mean, heavyweights.
Heavyweights is the cardio aspect of it.
Is there?
Yeah, there is.
How? Well, I'll explain it to you now. So let me just touch on this point, right? So
well, I'm braving out.
When you think about your physical attributes, right? Yeah, speed, power, cardio, everything else, right? There is a limiting factor, and that limiting factor is your maximum strength. So max strength is in the middle. Right. Okay? So let's say I done your 1RMs tomorrow, Bren, and you had a 150 kg deadlift. Okay, and we spend 10 weeks improving your deadlift. Okay, we would find your power goes up,
yep.
Your speed goes up,
yep.
Your cardiovascular goes up, your endurance goes up. So I want you to imagine your muscle fibre is like a car engine.
Right.
So by when you increase its max strength, what you're basically doing is taking it from being a 1.4 litre to a 1.8 litre. So all of a sudden now this muscle fibre will give you more bang for your buck.
Got you.
So max strength is a precursor for all your other attributes. Whenever you improve your max strength, everything else goes up with it. Everything. Yeah, your cardio, because now this muscle is more efficient at using oxygen. It's a better piece of tissue. So if I was your coach and I was programming your training, whenever you were in a fight camp, well, 5 weeks out, I would want you to lift heavy twice a week. Outside the camp. I'd want you looking to try and get to new numbers all the time using a strategic periodization plan. Then when you go, so this is called linear periodization. So there's two main ways to periodize for MMA. Linear is like max strength, like hypertrophy strength training into power endurance, into speed.
Yeah.
Fight week, go.
Got you.
That's linear. Yeah, so it progresses.
That seems about right.
That's one way to do it. That's probably best for like me, because I'm a guy who likes to have time off for a few weeks, get fat, get on the booze, and then start again.
Yeah.
So that works for me, but that's why I need a big run-up to a camp. I can't take fights 4 weeks out because I won't be
in shape. 15-month run-up?
So for me, linear is going to be your best. For me, you want a linear approach. Someone like Bren, who I know is dead active, could take a fight short notice. He might be better doing a non-linear approach. Mm-hmm. So that might be one max strength training session a week,
all the way
one power session a week, one endurance session a week.
Oh, yeah.
No, but it's a bit different now. Now that I know my fight dates, it's something that's been...
Well, if you do that, my advice would be to peel off that now go into a linear. It allows you to... Because, listen, you can't improve what you can't measure.
Mm.
All right? That's a little saying you're hearing in sport coaching, right? So it's important to measure things, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So like at our gym, if we're using, like now, something you should get into. So John Moores University now, they're offering free physiology testing for any MMA fighter. DEXA scans, rest and metabolic rate, everything, bro. You're talking about it.
If
you want to come down on
20%. 100%.
Come down.
I've had loads of DEXAs in the past. Well, I'm into all that side of it.
Tell everyone what a DEXA is.
It's the most comprehensive form of body composition scanning. So we have stuff like calipers and stuff, which give a good idea.
So I'll fucking come when you're going down.
That's brilliant, mate.
They might not let you because you're not an active fighter. But you put your mind.
You can pay, can they? No.
I don't think they're doing that either.
Okay.
What they're trying to do is compile loads of data on combat. They've got something called the Combat Research Group.
Oh, wicked.
Which is, so GB Boxing uses something called the England Institute of Sport and Performance. So GB Boxing pay them to come in and provide that sports science service.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I'm hopefully going to do is align John Moores University's Combat Research Group with English MMA for the amateurs. So the likes of Mo, they'll get treated a bit more like a GB athlete. They'll have a training program which I'll underpin, but then it'll be all done with their testing.
Brilliant. Stuff.
A DEXA is the most comprehensive form of body scanning composition. So let's say we scan Bren now, like we probably find with him being a right-hander, there's 400 grams more muscle in that arm than his left arm. It'll tell you the weight of his skeleton. Do you know what? This blew my mind. Yeah. What do you reckon what your skeleton weighs?
What a fucking question.
Okay. What do you reckon my skeleton weighs?
Right. I think skeleton probably weighs between 8% and 10% of your body weight.
Not even close.
Really? More or less?
Less.
Really?
It's about 3%, 4%.
Fucking
my skeleton was 2.4 kilos, lad.
2 kilograms?
2.4.
Think about shit bigger than that.
Less than my skeleton was less than 3 kilograms, lad. That is a tiny.
We're just water out of
that's just a couple of percent. Yeah, we are. We're all that. So what a DEXA scan does is it gives you really targeted information about how much muscles in your face, what your skeleton, all that stuff. So it just gives fighters a better understanding of where the physiology is at. So again, let me just add to this. So there's four key areas that the coach needs to be aligned with. One is technical training, and the other is tactical training. So technical is how to do it. Tactical is how you're going to set it up, essentially. That's what they are. Physiology
is all this stuff, sports science and DEXA scanning and S&C training, and then psychology, which is your mental. So again, like, for me, to have an all-encompassing training program, you need a good technical and tactical coach, which most guys have. Then you should be working with a good strength conditioning coach, maybe a mobility guy once a week, maybe doing your yoga. That's all part of your physiology training. Ideally incorporating testing, regular testing. What your 1RM's like throughout the year, what your power saying, what your VO2 max saying, what your rest and metabolic rate saying. If you can keep that going all year round. And then obviously a psychology, the mental aspect of it. And again, that's different for everyone. But, you know, what I'm trying to create now for some of the amateurs in our gym is all that's there for them. Wow. It's all laid on.
If you can do
and,
that,
and they get a booklet for the year. So
10 years ago,
I've made one of these for Danny Roberts. Years ago. I was going to approach you to see if you want to start doing some of this. So what you do is you'd have a front page, Brendan's picture on.
Yeah, template.
Yeah, there you go, Bren.
There's
Brendan
Loughran.
Put a couple of your sponsor logos on there. It's hard backed. Right. You open the first page and it's got your profile. So we start off with your age, your weight, everything else. Then we say, what are the goals? So that's everything's about goal setting. So this is another thing that most coaches don't do. They don't set goals and then review them. So yours is going to be like, okay, this year we're going to win 3 fights in the PFL. We've got 2 fights in 1 night here. And that'll be laid out. So there's like the basic profile. Then the next page, it's like SWOT analysis. So strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Strengths is like good all-rounder, good physical specimen, you know. He's got a good mindset to train and he'll go and spar everybody else. So if I was doing it for you, I'd say they're your strengths. Your attitude is another strength. And this is done with you in mind, and you'd have everyone who works with you. So Tony, everyone chips in, and we have to all.
Wow.
In the end, you
and
decide.
Honest,
but you have
honest,
to be very honest.
Very honest,
very
brutally
honest. Then you've got your weaknesses.
Yep.
Nose.
And then you've got your opportunities and your threats. So your opportunities might be like, okay, opportunities, you've got Dominic Cruz there as a friend. So that's an opportunity that you maximise anyway. Threats might be overtraining. Or threats might be doing too much of the wrong training.
Yeah,
so you'll train your ass off. But really, if we were to do a profile,
I know.
Do you know what? Bren's doing 6 runs a week. Let's cut that down to 2. But let's get the powerlifting in there when he's out of camp. So
I agree.
Start to become objective, right? So that's like that's what sets up the programme. Then you go to something called a macro cycle. So that's your whole year. So that's a year there, and it'll have your months across the top, and then it'll have your fight dates booked in, which you've got now. And then you'll have all your types of training down the side, like strength training, physiology, this all the way down. And then you literally just colour in where that training's happening throughout the year. Even like your technical tactical stuff. So there's your year planned out for you in terms of the big picture. Then you open it up, and then you'll have what we call meso-cycles. So these are blocks of training, okay? Now, for me, there's 3 phases of training for an MMA fighter. Preparation phase, fight camp, and transition phase. So preparation phase is like when you're not in camp. So what I'm going to go into as soon as I'm healed up next week.
One rep stuff.
Heavy lifting, 1 rep max lifting. Loads of high volume but low intensity. So, you know, you better go and train for 2 hours, but light. You'll get more out of that. This builds the foundations up. So that's your preparation phase. That's a great time to work on your technical development as well. So you should be very, very like centered around development.
Just going playfully sparring.
All this type of stuff,
Going
then you've got your fight camp preparation phase. So this is where we come off the sort of, it's not about getting better now. It's about developing an engine. It's about, everything's about specificity now. So we're coming away from the high volume. Yeah. We're lowering the volume of training, but we're upping the intensity.
Yes.
And then that's a gradual, it's like a bell-shaped curve.
Sparring, sprints. Like,
and then even then, there's something called tactical periodization. Is like, we can even when you're 3 weeks out, you might be in all powers doing a Thursday morning and 5 weeks out, Bren, you're going to do a shark tank at the end. It's going to be 2 minutes on, 4 minutes off. We want the rest to be bigger than the work. What this allows to do is hit higher heart rates. So this will be early on in the fight prep phase. And then when we get close to his fight, I might be like, you're in for 3 minutes now, lad. All defense. You're only out for 1 minute, then you're back in. That's
you say tactical?
Phase. That's called tactical periodization. That's where you take the principles of periodization, which we apply to strength conditioning, and we start applying them to the training that's going on in the gym. So we have this at my gym.
Are you going for fight specific tactical stuff as well? So if he's fighting a fucking dagger, he's gonna just be getting
I'm about to get to this
to
I'm about to get to this. So again, Bren's doing all these runs, and for me, I think that could be changed up. So, you know, Bren might be fighting a guy who's really good at X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So what you might do is say, instead of running for 15 minutes, Bren, let's do 10 5-minute rounds. Okay, round 1, is you're just working your footwork and your straight shots. Round two, so you're conditioning the rounds of training. Round two, you know, we've been working a specific combo. Round three, we might give you a training partner and you're just going to flow out of single leg defenses. Round four, you're getting up off your back. So all of a sudden now your heart rate is doing exactly what it does when it runs.
Yeah.
So it's covered the run. It is a run in heart. Your heart don't know any different, lad. It's not like, Bren, I like running that right. I'm not getting fit now, lad. You should be running.
No,
your heart doesn't have a clue what's going on outside. So you adapt your training. So now you're using your conditioning training, yes, physiology training, and you're incorporating tackle and tactical stuff.
At the same time?
At the same time. Yep. So, you know, sometimes I will do 1 minute rows on the rower. And a minute off, and I'll do 10 of them because that's on my program. But Connor always says to me, like, if you want to take that row out and get a partner and do 10 1-minute rounds of wrestling drills, fine.
Same thing.
Good. That'll do me
still
better.
Get the same heart rate.
So basically, these training programs, what they do is it means that you're never doing nothing that doesn't have a purpose or a function.
Got you.
So it's like, you know, I used to put this hashtag a little bit on the gym thing, is hashtag train with purpose. You could go and do an hour's training with one guy and it's dead hard, or you could go and do an hour's training with me maybe and it's not that hard, but actually I've pushed you to your goals better, because everything should come back to the goals. And this is what a lot of guys don't do enough of. They don't train specific to a goal. Do you know what I mean? So there's a lot in it, but again, if you go and work with coaches who've been through like world class performance training, then this is how they talk. This is the language they speak. The Sutton UK Sport is the biggest sporting organisation in the UK. They have something called the Aspire Programme. I didn't know it was called the Aspire Programme before Amy Jimbo. And what they do is they pick 10 coaches a year from like badminton, tennis. I'm going to try and push them to pick some MMA coaches this year. The ones who are working with the national team. And this is what they do. They put them through a 2-week intensive training programme at universities like Loughborough. And they look at all this stuff. I've been reading a book called Talent Lab recently. And it even goes this deep, like GB swimming was like doing really badly. I'm using this for me thing next week when I talk to the English MMA board to set the tone. GB swimming, they were gonna pull a plug on it, lad. It was a diabolical outfit of Olympic sport in UK, and they brought in a. Basically, they found out it was all the coaches were crap. They were all dead closed minded, like what I was saying, like they won't coach other swimmers and all that. So what they done, they brought this guy in called Phil Redmond, and he was a rugby player, 20 capped England rugby player, and he was now working in my role as a coach development officer. And the reason he chose him is because he was all about personal development. Even when he was a rugby player, he trained MMA and wrestling, and because it made him a better rugby player. So they wanted someone with that mindset, so they brought him in. He's done a big cultural shake-up. He'd done like something called 360 degree analysis, and he interviewed all the athletes, and he was at the end of it, he was like, it's the coaches. The coaches are crap. Like, GB swimmers were only given their season best performance at the World Champions or the Olympics 20% of the time. But the Americans and the Australians, who were the best swimming nations, they were having season best performances 75%+ of the time at the big races. So imagine training all year round and your best performances in your sparring. Something's wrong. So he knew it was the coaching. There was too much pressure coming from the coaches, and there was too much nervous energy from the coaches. So what he did was UK Sport threw a load of money into this. They paid a load of actors, right? And they set up a fake Rio Olympics at Loughborough University. So these coaches turned up, not quite sure what was going on, and they had heart rate monitors attached to them. This is the coaches. So they had their swimmers doing
fake... What the fuck?
They had their swimmers, they had their swimmers doing like races against like other GB swimmers or whatever. They had like a fake crowd, fake officials, and then they set up scenarios where like they poisoned someone's like... protein shake and like they injured one of these athletes, and it was to put these coaches in scenarios to see how they responded.
Wow.
They were filmed and then they were asked to watch back the filming. Yeah, and then what they did was they demonstrated like each scenario. They had like a screen showing what was going on here and what their heart rate was. And he's like, look how stressed you are there. Your heart rate is nearly as high as the athlete's. How does that feed back to the athlete? They're gonna feel this nervousness.
Wow.
It's called arena skills. So, you know, these are the lengths Olympic sports go to develop athletes and coaches. And, you know, this is what I think we can start doing it now for MMA when we start educating coaches.
There's somewhere, I can't fucking remember for the life of me which gym it is now, but there's a pretty top-level gym, pro gym, UFC-level gym, that in fight camp does the ring walks. practices the ring walks, practices leaving you in the cage, during case the guys decide to take a piss before he comes out, cold on your own.
Well, even when we do our, we got a guy called Dan McGonigal, the sports psychologist we've got based at the gym, he works with all the amateur A fighters. When he gives the lads documents to go away and use for visualizations, he expects you to visualize who's in your corner, what they're going to say, what shorts you're wearing, what logos are on your shorts. Like I was saying before, the more closer it is to reality, the better it prepares you. You visualise what's going to happen, the better the myelin sheathing goes of the neurons. Mm-hmm. So it's like you've done it before when you haven't done it yet. It works, it's proven. So, yeah.
There used to be something I had to do, diary stuff for rugby, and you had to, when you was evaluating your own performance, you had to write in things that happened. Did you get stuck in traffic on the way to the match? Joe, how did that affect your performance and shit like that? And they go over it and ask you, like, about this. And you don't realise sometimes, like, I got stuck in fucking an accident on a motorway going to a game. It was one of my last few games at Doncaster. I fucking hated it when I was playing there. And I got stuck in traffic and I arrived late. The lads were already warming up when I got there. So I had an argument with the coach when I got there. Then I got benched. And then when I came on, I was fucking shit. And then when you sit down with him afterwards, you're analysing that. Like, well, yeah, he's like, I wasn't fucking mentally prepared to go play.
If you're not logging your training, you haven't got that data to reflect on. So before I was talking about the meso cycles, they're like, so that's any phase before it changes to a new phase. So it might be a 6-week prep phase, 6-week fight camp, and then transition phase after your fight camp. Even down to how you plan your week. So I might give you a weekly planner, Bren, and say, right, sit here next to me, Bren. It'll have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday across, and it'll have like 4 blocks here, and we'll put in what training you're going to do, and then there'll even be block each morning on the sheet. You'll have to put how long you slept for, what your quality of sleep was like.
Just get a sleep tracker, remember
then
that
each session you have to, it's called perceived rate of exertion, so how hard did you work, so you'll rate that out of 10. Then you'll have a performance things where it's like, how well do you think you did out of 10. Then there's one for me to say how well, or the coach is how well you did out of 10.
Wow.
And then on the back there's a sheet which because self-reflection is king. This is what good coaches do, the self-reflective. Bad coaches are the opposite. And then on the back of the sheet on Friday, you're meant to catch up with whoever the programme coordinator is, turn the sheet over and say, there's what you're training this week. And that'll give us a good idea on your fatigue levels, everything else. Turn the sheet over and it's like, what have I done well this week? What can I do better? What am I going to do different next week? And then I give you, or the coach gives you their feedback. And then everything you're doing is recorded. You know, something could happen.
You could go, hang on,
let's look back in his booklet. What was he doing 3 months ago when his VO2 max was well better? Do you know what? When he was doing 6 runs, it was working better. I tell you what, do the 6 runs again, bro. Because although I'm giving you the framework to work off, it's not always, every athlete is different. And you've always got to respect those individual differences. So if you plan your training, log your training, and then, you know, just create that log. You've got something there to look back on and reflect whenever your performance is going up or down.
Think you need to get in that arcade.
Listen, mate, I'm all for moving forward to sport. My last camp was the first time I actually went to the Health and Performance Centre in Manchester. I've done my VO2 now. I've started implementing that, little bits of it. Not nowhere near to the level. I wear heart rate monitors now.
Yeah.
I take a Wednesday afternoon off. And doing things like this. Come on, let's get it right now. I've been fighting 11 years. No one's going to show me a punch now, a magic punch.
Listen,
it's about the 1%.
Well, this is exactly what it's about, right? When you start a new sport, it's time for quantity training.
Yeah,
so by quantity training, that means you've got a knowledge gap to fill, right? When we talk about quality training, this is what Bren's talking about now. This is the 1% stuff. You're not going to learn him any new techniques now.
Yeah.
It's literally about getting that training program oiling the machine
peaking
up,
at the right
peaking
side.
At the right time.
Yeah.
So
being physically and mentally,
have you heard about like the science of tapering?
Bits and bobs.
Okay, so imagine you've got a graph here. Be good to draw this out, but let's just imagine it. You've got a graph here. The graph starts on Monday.
Yep.
The fight's on Saturday.
Yep.
Right. Now, there's 3 things on the graph. One is fatigue, one is fitness, and one is preparedness, okay? Fatigue, if you hardly train from Monday to Saturday, is going to drop fast as fuck. Within a few days, it's going to really drop, right?
Agreed.
Fitness is going to come down quite gradually. Very gradually, but come down. So
how long would you have to take off?
Just bear with me a sec. So a taper is 8 to 14 days, right? So I'm happy with 8. For me, it works for MMA.
Me too.
So let's say Bren's doing an 8-day taper. I would be happy for Bren to lose 3% fitness, right? Yeah. But I would want his fatigue to come down 97%, because guess what's going to go up? Preparedness. And preparedness means performance. Fitness does not equal performance. Preparedness equals performance. So sometimes there's even an argument to lose fitness to improve.
Right, you know, I take the full week off four or five.
I do next to nothing.
You feel brand new. Knocks healing, you're talking mental sharpness. That's what you're talking about. When it comes
after
to preparedness.
An 8-week fight camp is dying for seven days of
There's something, it's called super compensation. So let's say I'm like working Brent. It is Brent here. He's doing loads of heavy lifting and it's going up and going off. But eventually his muscles, they can't take it all. So all we'll do now is either burn him out or even start removing some of them gains. So what we do is we build them up and then we let him have a break. Yeah. We build them up, we fatigue him a bit, then we let him have a break and the new performance level's up again. Then we do him a bit more, we knock him down a bit more, but then he has a break and he goes up again. Yeah. This is this gradual, you know, this is how you develop an athlete rather than break an athlete.
And one other thing, I think each athlete is extremely different.
Yeah.
Like, massively. Like, what works for me won't work for Dean. We're two totally, look at our bodies, we're two totally different style of fighters. He's a bigger weight cutter than me. He likes different types of, you know, the martial arts aspect. And what I've found from coaching like yourself is everything. So basically, if you put me and him in a gym, we're both in fight camp, we've been doing it that long now, we're going to train to our 100% maximum in each session, because our results have shown, do you know what I mean? Where if I take a lazy fighter, which I've seen, and I put him in, I can't trust to leave him on his own. I'm going to go rest. I know he's not going to put 100% in, whereas if I know you, and I know you will, I can trust you to kind of go and do your own thing. Now, this is where it comes in with, like, each athlete's different. So if he tells Mohamed Mokaev, if he says, I'm going wrestling tonight, you know that Mohamed Mokaev is turning up there and putting 100% in. So the next morning, you're giving it kind of easy.
I only have to ask him to train less, not more.
This is what I'm saying. But not every athlete you do.
No, some athletes I'm going, where have you been for 2 weeks?
Where are you, mate?
I've been swimming. Swimming?
You went wrestling. Did you get off early? How many rounds did you do? You know what I mean? Where did you get to? Who did you wrestle? And that's the sort of questions you have to ask. And I think now this book and this thing that you're doing with all the coaches in one circle, the athlete's accountable for every session they do. And everyone getting together is the way forward.
That's heart rate monitoring, I'm a big fan of.
I think,
waking up in the morning, you know, what's your heart rate? Is it raised?
Are you wearing that in bed? What? You're wearing that for when you wake up?
No, I don't
see. Bang it on in the morning, don't
you? Yeah. I don't check my heart rate in the morning, I'll be honest. I should do, but I don't.
You can get apps now, like one's called Train Heroic, or you can get, like, there's a few others where you link the heart rate up to it and you link in all your coaches. So, like,
I've heard about this.
So it'll put you'll have your S&C programs in there. You can have bits of training in there.
Why did you get an Apple Watch? It's on all the time.
Yeah, but again, what these apps can do is they can be like, right, Bren, your heart rate's gone up 2 this morning, so take the day off.
Yeah,
it'll tell you if you need to train harder or less. So you can even get apps now that do this stuff.
Is that true, that? If it goes up, slightly increase?
I believe there's some truth in it, yeah, or
man's
training less hard. Yeah.
No,
I get down to for
no one want to know about fatigue and how bad it is.
I don't know. Did it the other morning, it's 41, so I'm not that far off.
41's extremely fit. The lowest I've ever recorded on mine was 37, but that was when I was in bed. That was when I was in bed.
Go on, lad, you beat me then.
So I was lying down in bed. That was the week I fought John Cullen, years ago.
Wow, you've been doing it for that long? You've been well on it then, from back then.
I was in uni then, studying that stuff.
Yeah, so you were...
I was already starting. I was only a novice with it, but I was just using, you know, bits of it.
I'm a massive, I've been doing it probably 3 years, fan of heart rate monitors. They're the truth. There's what's really going on, and there's how you feel.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
For example, I was on the track.
What are you doing with the data, though? So, are you looking at it and go, oh, it's a bit higher, it's a bit lower?
I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I went on the track. I've got 400 metres, 200 metres, 4 sets of both. Now, I've got times from my last camp, where my heart rate went to in the last camp. Now, I was 6 seconds out on my 400 metres yesterday. Jack Salt that I brought, he was dying as well. Now, I'd never recorded any of that in the past, so now I know, wow, I'm 6 seconds behind, I'm a fatigued, am I not fit as I was in the last camp?
What did I say before? So you can't improve what you can't measure.
Yes!
You might be 12 seconds off and going, I reckon I'm 6 seconds faster this week. How do you know?
What's your heart rate peaking at?
You know what, I find it extreme. Here's another one, that's another one that I'll get to. So I took some sprints from Alliance that we do, 6 sets, incline sprints on the treadmill. Now, for that last camp, for the last 4 or 5 weeks, I couldn't get in the red zone. My heart rate wouldn't even touch the red zone. I'm like saying to my coach, like,
which is what for you?
We couldn't get, well, what is it? What is the red zone in general?
Is it 20%?
180,
190? 20% off the top?
Around that. But anyway, I couldn't get there. And I'm like saying to Adam and all,
I can't get in there, but that's a different reason.
I'm like, I can't get in there. I did them for my camp. Now, first time, I'm in the red zone for the first two.
Is that a good
and
thing?
I was like, it was just very interesting.
Yeah,
like,
because that, you want to max your heart rate.
Yeah.
That's the point.
You want to empty out the glycogen, restart it. So this is stuff I'm only getting into in sort of like the last 2-3 years. And now I'm like, whoa. All I've learned from putting this strap on, and like, that sounded weird, right? All I've learned from putting this on and timing is a hell of a lot, mate. And I'm thinking, wow, it is the future.
What, you're peeking forward and seeing how long it takes.
Thing
for it
with
to
me
drop
is, I'm a dog, mate. Put me on the yard, train all day. I can't do that no
see,
more.
See, that's not good.
It's not. I'm 29
well,
now.
I'm going to get this writ on the walls, right? Do you believe train hard, fight easy is a good mantra?
Train smart, fight easy. I know that's what
train smart, fight hard. Only can crushers fight easy, right? You ain't going to have no easy fights.
Nah,
don't let
no
anyone tell you. You can train hard enough to have an easy fight. Mm-hmm. It's not possible. It's a lie, all right? Even if we get you 20% fitter, lad, these monsters you're fighting on PFL, lad, they're like you, lad. That's it. They're animals. They're beasts. They live, eat, they breathe, they sleep it. That's it. So there's no easy fight. You've said this yourself, mate, so don't kid yourself that you can train hard enough that you're going to make fight day easy, right? Change that perception now.
Yeah.
Train smart, fight hard. If you're getting in there and you feel like you can do more with your heart rate, you're not being enough of a savage. That's it, right? And if you can get away with training hard and fighting easy, sound, you must be crushing cans every weekend.
There was two mantras that I saw in gyms when I was in the army that I liked.
Go on.
Sweat saves blood. Was one, which is probably an MMA one as
sweat
well.
Sweat saves blood.
Yeah.
I like that one for now. I might change my mind when I think about it more.
Only the fit survive was another one, which I like that one.
I like that too.
I've got one that my coach told me for years. He'll laugh at this one. I always bring up one a week, don't I, what he told me.
Who are we talking about here?
Tony.
Okay.
So he said,
put that down. Stop licking it.
What?
No.
Yeah. No, the long route draws sweat, the short route draws blood. What it means by that is, you better prepare your ass
properly. Properly prepared.
Any shortcuts, you're getting bust up.
Yeah. I mean, the levels that we're fighting at ACB and PFL, mate, you're talking about savages. And forget 1% and 2%, mate. You need to be getting 10% out of your training session. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to be at a stage where we've had a lot of fights now. Everyone in there is the same as you. They live and breathe it. They wake up in the morning, they train full time. Mate, they're throwing $1 million bag like that. Do you think these people that are in here, me, these 11 other people...
Is it cash as well? It's cash.
Nah, it's
these guys
Christ
are getting in with the mentality that they'll die in the cage. Like, if you put £1 million, like, lad, people join the army and go and catch bullets for £800 a month.
It's so cool.
So,
I know.
We think about the mentality of these savages who've had 60 fights, lad.
From war-torn countries.
Yeah. And they need to eat. They've got kids to
feed. And $1 million on the line.
It's war, lad.
We're talking about savage levels, so that's why I train like I do.
What psychological stuff are you doing at a minute with English MMA and all that lot? Is it the visualisation stuff you're
doing? I'm not really too worried about that at the moment, because for me, that's something that's like a cherry on the top. I've just got a new mind coach, though, Phil Steele, and he has opened my mind massively. He's really good, the mind coach.
I've got that, mate.
But he's all about self-talk and just, you know, little things like that. Everything's about the internal. But again, what he's really good at is looking at me in an individual. Okay, Dean, so what is it about you that might stop you getting a new FC now? Well, it's my workload. It's my other commitment. So mine's a lot of... I go to and we sit and talk about how I'm going to delegate more and... You know, so everyone's different, like you say. But yeah, English MMA, that's not something I'm big on. It's more about the coach development pathway
and the
elite athlete development pathway.
It's more of a personal thing than the psychological. Or aspiring.
No, well, like I said before, psychology will come in it. There's them 4 key areas, technical, tactical, physiological and psychological. So we will cover those things in there. But I'd say with what we need to achieve first and foremost, that's probably the last thing to cover. That's the last thing to add to your mix.
Like, just touching back on what you're saying about the mind thing, it's not something I've really explored in, and I know it's definitely something that I should be doing. I had one for a little bit, just fell off. I feel like I've got ADHD, I don't know if I've got it, I'm always on the move, so I find it hard to switch my brain to sit and meditate. It's something I find really difficult, so something I have incorporated, I know you've seen it on Instagram a lot, is I do a lot of yoga now.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you why. Because for 1 hour, at least, usually 90 minutes, I'm not going to look at that.
Yeah, no,
I'm going to be on this mat,
living in the present moment.
And all I'm going to do, if I'm going to concentrate on this, plus it's great for your body, you're lubricating your body, you're oiling yourself up for the next session or whatever. And also, you're taking off a workload. So if I'm sparred in the day or yoga at night, it's absolutely perfect, isn't it?
Does it feel like a recovery session?
Mate, it's more in the
head.
I love it. I was doing loads of it, but I've stopped for the last like 3 months.
How good is it for your mind?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I can't put into words,
so you don't feel it's a workout? Because it is a workout.
You could go in there feeling tired, and it might hurt doing it still, but then when you 2 hours after you've finished, you feel revitalised.
I won't mind getting into it. I am just not fucking flexible enough to do it.
You get after a hot yoga session. I can't put into words the euphoria of coming out of there. And this is I'm someone that's trained in everything. I've done CrossFit, I've done MMA, wrestling. And this is something that I do, what's the easiest. Well, it's not the easiest, it's quite difficult, especially when you first start, but I get the most benefit from. And I'm thinking, I'm still on a mat doing this. But mate, I don't know what's going on in there. I can't put my finger on it, but it makes me feel better and it makes my performance enhance massively for me. Like I say, every fight is different. You might send a savage in there to do yoga and he'll be like, what are you just wasting now?
Yeah.
And it took me a while, but going back to the mind thing now, that's my 1%. It's something I've not tapped into yet. And I feel like this is heading towards that way now. It's me on that mat. Like I say, I'm always on my head in my phone looking at daft stuff on the internet for no reason.
Like him.
No,
I'm the same.
And I think, what am I doing? I've just wasted 3 hours here. 3 hours that I could... Now, instead, I'm doing 90 minutes. I'm on that mat. It's all women in there, mate. It's just all old women and people. You've got 60-year-old people in there, all with the same mentality of going in there for this 1 hour, watching this person stretch. The heat benefits are obviously amazing because it's like being in a sauna for an hour, which has got its own benefit.
Is it that hot?
It's very hot.
Well, he's on there for the toilet.
I am.
Something in there. Go for it.
Go on. So that's what I'm saying. So being in that yoga session for me, although you might say, oh, you're an MMA fighter, you're doing yoga. It's like, all right, but it has got benefits, mate. And I think, Stephen, we should get you to do a week of yoga.
Fuck all the way off.
And let's talk about it, please.
Do I have to wear yoga pants?
Yeah.
Sick.
I think we're coming to... How long have we done now?
Fucking ages.
Yeah.
95
let's
minutes,
wrap it.
I think.
We've lost
our guest. Should we wait for Dino to get back? But yeah, I think you've let the fucking cat out of the bag now, haven't you,
yep,
with what the plan is?
Yeah.
So we'll see how... I've not decided that it's definitely happening. But I think it's
what
happening.
What date?
November 2020.
Oh, mate, imagine the shit we can get you in by then.
Well, hopefully you'll be fucking... You'll have £1 million in the bank.
Well, just while we're finishing up, I mean, like I say, what are we on now? Number five?
Something like that.
So we're number five. We're still open. We're still...
Not even fucking talked about fucking 242.
Forget all that. We've done enough today, but... anything else that you think you'd like us to cover? Any particular guests you'd like on?
Yeah, shout out your guests. I just got a text off Dre there and it says, think Dan Hardy's up for coming on.
Brilliant. We're going to have Mahmoud Mokaev. We're going to have
Scott Ascombe
next week.
We'll roll through. Like, Goddard, someone I want to really speak to.
Yeah. Dean wasn't. Listen,
that's not his last fucking time on here.
I was mind blown.
What a mad start that was. Straight out of the gate. I didn't know that.
We're just finishing
it's
up anyway.
Now.
But thank you so much for coming, Dean. That was me. You've rattled my brain.
No, I enjoyed it.
And it was incredible, mate.
I think there's loads more to talk anyway, because I think what's happening with the MMA Association is fascinating, and what that means for a proper amateur network in this country.
Yeah.
Not only is it an amateur network in this country, but it's also linked through IMAF to the whole fucking world. Like, you can't believe this is worldwide, isn't it? There's Kazakhstan, Bulgaria, America, China.
It's
not like one of them sports where there's five countries
involved.
There's
no ego involved. He's grew up in MMA and he's just trying to push this sport forward because he's seen what it's done for our lives.
Exactly.
And we know that
if you're post-fight, mate, you should probably go. You should probably go and check out Bahrain for the World Championships. It will blow your mind.
I had a gym for a while, for 4 years. Brought some great athletes through. As you've seen, we've interlinked our training for a long time. And right now is the peak of my career. Yep. I've got a chance to be a millionaire.
That's it. You need to focus on that.
You know what it's like, Dean. You can't be half coaching and half fighting.
But this is why I've brought Johnny in.
Exactly.
Phil's back. I've brought a tutor in. So I'm trying to change my life now to get back to Brent's mindset.
Exactly.
It might take me a few months and then... You know, I'm hopefully going to fight December, but then I want to be right back chasing UFC.
Exactly.
But then at least I've left me gym with amazing coaches in. And these other, like, my sixth form course is going to be running as usual with me acting as a consultant. Mm. The stuff I'm doing with the governing body, it's more of a consultancy role, giving them guidance on what we need to do and how we need to do it. So yeah,
and I think the governing body is such an exciting thing because it's been Wild West, hasn't it?
Oh, just touching on what we're saying as well is we've both grew up in this sport. We've watched it go from zero to 100, and this guideline, Olympics, things like that are like the next level again.
Yeah.
Oh. And it had, how much it's given me as an athlete and as a person, how it's changed my life. If I can give that to one other person, two other person, then your life's meaningful. Yeah.
Just a quick question, because we did have a few questions in which we kind of blanked, to be honest. Kieran, is Mokaev the best amateur that you've seen? I mean, his record's flawless. He's the world champion. He might be one of the best British amateurs ever.
Well, obviously, I'm his coach, right?
semi-biased.
So I'm semi-biased, but at the same time, there's genuinely kids in our gym who are just as good or got as much potential, right? But at the end of the day, you can only judge people on performance, right? So there's no way.
18.
He's not 19 yet, is he?
He's not. He's 19 today.
Oh, he might be 19 then, yeah.
19.
Sorry, yeah.
Scary, mate.
But, you know, the gym and competing are two separate things. So Mo is an absolute performer.
Savage.
That kid is, on paper and in real life, right now, the number one amateur in the world.
Yeah.
He's
that's
the hottest prospect in amateur MMA. Yeah. And you know what? He deserves every bit of success that's going to come his way.
Yeah, I'll just touch on that too. I've watched that kid, right, get trains from 2-3 trains, buses, walking in the rain. Wide Club back in the day when he first came and he was that big, mate. And I'm actually going to post pictures today because I've got our first picture and then a picture that we trained today.
It's not easy for him to get to aspire, you know what I mean?
Look, he goes to Liverpool to train. It's before he had a car. Do you know what I mean? He just only got a car, a month or two ago. Yeah, so like,
I think the amateur pathway
is this kid is an inspiration to me, honestly, and I mean that. Watching him is like watching a young me running around just so hungry for success.
I'll
you say, there's a big fucking line of kids like him now that are all starving. Yeah.
He's definitely leading the way, like, isn't he?
Yeah, Adam Alasinga as well, which I think he won the Euros, the men's Euros. Yeah. I think it was the Euros. I don't think it was the Worlds prior. And again, the level of performance that he put in. I watched with a lot of interest those three fights and watched. He was quite exciting in the quarters and the semis, and then in the final he just went, I'm just fucking winning this. Going to win this. And he kind of wet blanketed it a little bit, but do you know what? He fucking came out with a gold. And I think, you know, with you potentially looking at a couple of fights in one night, I think going and watching the IMAF World Championships, I think you'll learn so
much. The format, the way people get
just
through multiple
figuring
fights.
Going through, basically, you've got to stay injury-free from that first fight. Even like a broken thumb or something like that, Joe, from a missed time punch.
I'm telling you now, mate, someone would have told me after that last fight, you got to get back in there. It wasn't happening. There's no way. Body seized up after it.
I had it with that KTM MMA, mate. My shin was basically snapped, lad, to get back in there.
It's like, I had the one before that, I broke my arm's hanging off. I'm not getting back in there,
am
I?
In you go.
So it's like, listen, that's a new challenge for me, is two fights in one night, but they're paying me, so who gives a fuck, you know what I mean?
I've got to fight in Madison Square Garden.
It's
a huge platform, it's Madison Square Garden, and at the end of the day, lad, you're here to be the best, and to be the best, you've got to beat the best, you know, I know the type of fighter you are, you'd much rather be over there, risking getting killed by some savage than battering some bum on show up there, so at the end of the day, lad, you're practicing what you preach, aren't you?
Exactly.
Right, we'll throw Dean's Instagram in the comments below so you can go and check out.
Yeah, you definitely want to follow Dean.
What we started with early doors.
You'll get that all day.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, brilliant.
Right, we are back on Saturday night. What are you doing actually for the fights?
Oh, don't be ringing me. Oh, actually, it's on at
7 o'clock, man. It's 7 o'clock. Yeah, it's a sick time.
Oh, I've got to climb Snowdon. Is it?
Right, well, we'll be back at 7 o'clock anyway for UFC 242, which we did plan on talking about and we haven't.
Next time.
So, yeah, maybe we'll review it next week. See you later.